Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us for this event organized by the Hellenic Observatory. Having the pleasure to welcome here with us the Minister of Labor and Social Security of Greece, Ms. Nikki Kerameus. Ms. Nikki Kerameus is here, as some of you at least know, for the big event tomorrow for within the Rebrain Greece initiative to speak to Greeks in London about the opportunities that are developing in Greece, the employment opportunities that are developing in Greece. And she's here with us today also to talk about the very extensive record of initiatives and reforms that the ministry has done over the recent past. The minister will talk about active labour market policies, policies for upskilling and reskilling, collective bargaining, but also interventions in the social security system, and so forth. Here at the Hellenic Observatory, we always aim to contribute to the public dialogue, but, and also to inform our student and academic and wider audiences, but we also try to inform policy by doing our own research on a number of areas, and including the labor market, as we have already been discussing with the minister. I should say a few words. Of course, you all know our speaker today, but I should say a few words. Ms. Kerameus is Minister of Labour and Social Security since 2004. Prior to that, she served as Minister of Interior in 2003-2004, and before that, perhaps more famously, Minister of Education in Greece in the period 2019-2023. And her record in all of her service is quite impressive, a very active reform record, but also very important interventions, especially on the education domain during the COVID years. She's been a Member of Parliament since 2015. She has studied in the University of Paris 2, and also in the United States at the Harvard Law School. She comes from a legal background, but she seems to be handling the Greek labor market quite very effectively. Before I pass the floor to our speaker, let me do a couple of housekeeping announcements. In the event of a fire alarm, we don't expect one, but in the event of it, you will be guided by the stewards to the fire assembly point, which is on Sheffield Street, around the building. If you have a mobile, please switch it off or put it to silent now. And if you're using the X or Twitter, the hashtag for today's event is hashtag LSE Greece. The event is available to watch live, and it's being recorded. So hopefully, if there's not any technical problems, it will also be available as a podcast later. And at the end of the presentation by the minister, we'll have a bit of an exchange, a bit of a discussion here on the stage, and then we'll open up for questions from the floor. If you have a question to ask, please indicate so by raising your hand. And when you ask your question, please identify yourselves and just stick to the question rather than to a long essay type of introduction. And wait for the microphone to come before you ask your question, partly because the event is being recorded. Okay, without taking any more of your time, thank you all for joining us. And Ms. Kerameus, please join us.
So good evening to all. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So thank you so much. I want to start by thanking very much the Hellenic Observatory and Professor Monasteriotis for the invitation to be here with you and for all of you. I know it's a difficult day in the midst of exams. It's a true pleasure and honor to be here. So thank you so much, Professor Monasteriotis, for the invitation. With us today is the Ambassador of Greece, Mr. Tsaousis, Secretary General of the Ministry of Labour as well. The idea, I think, for today's session was to give you an overview of the Greek labour market, what's happened in the past roughly 7 years, how the Greek labour market has been transformed throughout the years, how that has been achieved, and what our plan is moving forward. So this is The image. We started off in 2019. Greece had a very high unemployment rate of 18.5% back in March of 2019. The reason I've picked March is because the most recent data is of March, so we always compare the same months. So we used to have an unemployment rate of roughly 18%. Now we're down to 7 to 9, depending on the month. This is the largest reduction of unemployment in EU's history. And if one looks at the breakdown. So, as far as women's unemployment is concerned, the reduction is by 51%, youth unemployment by 47%, men's unemployment by almost 53%. So, this is the overall image of how the labor market has changed in the past 7 years. Now, this obviously is an indicator. These are the people behind the indicator. Because the reduction in employment is translated into 563,000 people who did not work back in 2019 and who are now working. So this is a purely quantitative figure. But here's the qualitative figure. And the qualitative figure is the radical increase in full-time employment. Greece used to have a full-time employment that was at 69%. Now it's up by roughly 10%. So we have a full-time employment rate of that reaches almost 79%. So here we're talking about qualitative figures as opposed to purely quantitative figures. But if one remains within the quantitative figures, we have 260,000 more women in the labor market compared to 2019, and we have a significant also reduction in the gender employment gap, which is something that we are focused on a lot. These are the EU countries, and this is the increase of the employment rate. Greece, for the past 3 to 4 months, is ranked between number one and number two among all EU countries as far as the increase of the employment rate is concerned. These are the latest figures that date to the end of 2025. Now, if one looks at the sectors that have the highest, I would say, employment increases, and all these figures are compared to 2019, so you will see that the areas, the sectors in which we increase, observe the highest employment increases, starting off with computer programming and consulting services, up by more than 100% compared to 2019. The construction field, up by 88%. Pharma industry, 61%. Logistics up by 34%, health services up by 32%, and the entire industrial sector, I would say, up by 22%. The Greek government has been trying for the past 7 years to move, I would say, in two directions at the same time. On the one hand, to increase wages to the extent possible, and on the other hand, to reduce tax burdens, social security contributions. So, to try to do both at the same time. So, this is the minimum wage, which when we took office, it was at 650 euros. Now it's up to 920 euros. That's an increase of 41.5%. Our target for next year, which is the end of our second term, is for the minimum wage to reach 950 euros. If one looks at the medium wage, it's above 1500, and this does not include bonuses and other, I would say, additional pays. So this is the one, I would say, direction. The other one is to lower taxes and, in particular, social security contributions. It used to be the case that Greece back in 2019 had among the highest social security contributions in Europe. Those have been reduced by 5.4 percentage points. Again, we're talking about the largest decrease of social security contributions, together with further reductions of social security contributions, which I will refer to a bit later on during this presentation. So, how has this happened? How have we moved along in trying to turn around the picture, so to transform the Greek labor market and to have much lower unemployment rates? This has not happened on its own. We have moved along a very strategic plan that comprises of several axes in order to increase labor market participation. And these axes, which you will see right now, are the ones we still are enforcing. Because we will not, obviously, our ambition is not to remain at 9% or 7%, is to go as low as possible as far as the unemployment is concerned. So these are telegraphically the nine axes that we are working on, have been working on for the past few years, and that have resulted in the radical decrease of unemployment. So the first one is we try to break that figure of 18% that you saw at the beginning in pieces and see who was actually not working back in 2019. So we see certain groups where there's a lot of room for potential: youth, women, people with disabilities, and elderly people. Number two, we focus tremendously on reskilling and upskilling, particularly taking into account the effect of AI, and I'm sure we may talk about that as well. Third, we focus on subsidized employment programs in a targeted fashion and not long term, but just as an initial, I would say, boost of employment. Number four, we focus a lot on what we call vocational education and training, always in sync with the actual needs of the labor market. Number five, we focus on bringing the two parts together. So citizens who are looking for jobs or who are looking for better jobs on the one hand, and on the other hand, companies that are looking for people to hire. This both in person, with career days held, job fairs basically held throughout the country, but also through digital tools like a recent job match application we have put in place. Rebrain Greece events. We look at the most valuable human capital we have abroad, and many of you are in this room, all of you are in this room, I would say. So we try to put in place incentives in order to attract those bright minds back to Greece, and that's the event that's going to take place tomorrow. At the Hilton London Metropole. Number seven, we have undertaken a reform of the unemployment benefit in order to incentivize people to get back to work. We are enforcing a reform that has to do with the digital labor card that essentially aims at recording the actual working time and to ensure that people are paid for the time they're actually working. And number nine, we're trying to facilitate as much as possible labor migration from third countries because Greece is in such need right now of human capital. So I will run through these nine axes. So the first one is we identify those groups where we see room for potential: youth, women, people with disabilities, and older workers. As far as the youth is concerned, since 2019, we have a 47% reduction in youth unemployment. How? For instance, through subsidized employment programs or through grants we give to young people who are unemployed and who want to set up their own company. So we give them an initial grant for a certain period of time. We go and check on them at regular intervals to make sure that they're actually making best use of these funds. But believe me, it's so touching to see, for instance, somebody who's 25 years old, who's unemployed, who's really disappointed in life, and to see him get this grant and to become an employer himself, and to then open up three or four or five job postings himself. It's one of the most touching, I would say, experiences one can have at the Ministry of Labor. Focusing a lot on vocational schools and on career days held nationwide, that's how we have achieved a almost 50% reduction as far as the youth unemployment is concerned. Women is one of the toughest, I would say, targets we've had because Greece has a tradition of a high women unemployment rate. It has gone down by 51% through a variety of ways. We are granting more and more, I would say, rights as far as the women are concerned. So we're extending maternity leave benefits. We have given the option to transfer up to 7 months of maternity leave to the father. We introduced paid paternity leaves. We have introduced and are applying tax exemptions for employers who actually grant benefits to new parents. So a number of initiatives that aim at incentivizing more women to join the workforce. People with disabilities. It used to be the case that if you were to receive a disability pension, you automatically had to stop working. That made no sense for us. Yes, the state should support people with disabilities, but why should you prevent them from working if they wish to work? So we did away with that restriction. And so now workers can receive disability pensions without having to stop working. We run a number of subsidized employment programs in order to incentivize people with disabilities to enter the workforce and to do away with, I would say, burdens that affected the entrance to the labor market. And older workers. This is one of the reforms that has gone really well in Greece and is being used as best practice at the Council of Ministers in Brussels. It used to be the case that if you were a pensioner and you wanted to work, you had 60% of your pension be withheld because you chose to work. We reduced that from 60% to 30%, and we saw a significant increase in the number of declared pensioners. So we thought, why not go all the way? Why not abolish completely all withholding of the pension? So as things stand today, if you're a pensioner and you want to work, you earn 100% of your pension, and you just have to give 10% of what you earn to the social security system. And that reform led to an increase of declared pensioners working from 35,000 to over 280,000. That's the effect of this positive measure that we introduced. And this has helped tremendously because Greece, as you can appreciate with this important reduction in unemployment, is lacking people. So we need people of all ages, of all experiences, and those who are receiving pensions as well. Second initiative, a lot of focus on reskilling and upskilling. Greece has undergone one of the most massive, obviously related to the country's population, reskilling and upskilling program. We're finishing up a program that affects more than, we had more than 600,000 beneficiaries, mostly focused on green and digital skills, also very closely linked to the effects of AI. Number three, subsidized employment programs. I referred to some earlier. We go in a very targeted fashion. We go and see where there's room for potential, and that we craft tailor-made programs in order to incentivize those population groups to work. And what's the effect? We ran a report with the OECD. We asked the OECD to run a report, which showed basically, look at this figure. Those who participated in subsidized employment programs, 1 year after, they're 62% more likely to be employed. Would I have liked that 62% to be 100%? Of course I would have. But is 62% a good indication that this is money well spent? It is a good indication, in my opinion, that this is money well spent. Number four, prioritizing vocational education and training. We go and detect the actual needs of the labor market. What does Greece need tremendously right now in the labor market? Plumbers, electricians, supply chain management employees, IT technicians, cybersecurity support staff, cooks, hotel staff. So we go and offer those specialties in 2 year programs. You do practical training in the morning and you go to school in the afternoon. After 2 years, you get accreditation and you have a 100% absorption rate in the actual labor market. And we do this in collaboration with companies. So a company comes and tells us we're missing X specialty. We go and craft a tailor-made program for that company. We have a satellite, I would say, school set up within the company. Those attending the school will go in the morning and do practical training with the company, and in the afternoon they will follow courses. Within 2 years, they will get their degree, and afterwards, the large majority, large, I would say, percentage of those are absorbed by the company where they did the practical training. Career days, job fairs throughout the country. We've done 55 in the last years in 20 different cities of Greece. This is the important figure, though it's hugely underestimated. More than 12,000 people have found jobs through these job fairs, and I say it's underestimated because 9 out of 10 companies don't tell us that they actually hire people afterwards at the job fair. So these are the only ones we know for sure, and that's why that's the number reported. But the actual number is obviously much, much higher. We use electronic tools. We've set up through AI an application. You go on your phone, you log on your phone, you put in your criteria. I want to work in Santorini from April to October. I have an experience as chef. I want to earn 2,000 euros at least. The system automatically matches me with all available job postings in Santorini, April to November, more than 2,000 euros, experience as a chef or hotels or restaurants. It gives you a list of all the available job postings. You can press on a phone that's right next to each listing, and you can have an interview on the spot. More than 85,000 matches through this application, and it's now expanding. This is only in the tourism and food and beverage sector so far. We're expanding it to all sectors across the economy. Rebrain Greece. Does anybody in this room not know that the Great Rebrain Greece event is taking place tomorrow? I want to check how good our nectar ring has been. So tomorrow morning, at the Hilton London Metropole, we're holding the 7th Rebrain Greece event, the 3rd in London and the 7th worldwide. The concept is as follows. We, as Ministry of Labour, organize these events in close collaboration with our embassies. Mr. Ambassador, thank you very much for your assistance, across the country, and our consulates. So we have come to the UK today together with 35 of the largest Greek companies, all banks, construction companies, private hospitals, telecoms, industries, any sector you can possibly manage. So the largest Greek companies are here. They flew in yesterday and today, and they're here for the event tomorrow. They are looking for people. They are here to offer tremendous job opportunities for job openings they have in Greece. We make best use of our channels through our embassy and our consulates to reach out to the Greek populations. And basically, what's going to happen tomorrow after 9:30 in the morning at the London Hilton Metropole is imagine a huge job fair. We're talking about thousands of people, and thousands is not an exaggeration. We're sold out. Thousands of interviews between those companies looking for people and Greeks, some who may have decided to return, others who are hesitating, and others who are not at all interested, but just the networking opportunity of actually meeting up with 40 companies is, I think, worthwhile. If you haven't planned to come tomorrow, please do come. It doesn't happen often. You have nothing to lose. At worst, it's going to be one of the best networking opportunities you will have if you want to have any connection to Greece. Unemployment benefits. So the unemployment benefit in Greece has been structured in the same way throughout 70 years. We recently changed it. It used to be the case that you received the exact same amount from the first day till the last day. We just changed it in the sense that it starts off now higher up and it progressively decreases. Why? Because we want to get the message across that we want you to find a job. And the digital labor card, I referred to it earlier, it has had a huge effect in tackling undeclared and underdeclared work. It records the actual working time and it ensures that people are paid for the working time. Attracting third country nationals, especially in certain sectors where we have increased labor needs, such as agriculture, construction, tourism. So we are working on expediting the process in order to attract easier third country nationals. And all of what I've just described, everything is based on data-driven policies. So we go and actually record what the actual needs of the labor market are, real time, short term, long term. And on the basis of that data, we craft tailor-made policies. Three quick points on three recent legislative initiatives. That should be number one. We recently passed a law that provides for the setting of the minimum wage on the basis of an algorithm. It used to be the case that the government used to fix the minimum wage. Now it's going to depend on an algorithm that takes into account the growth rate of the company, productivity rate, etc. Second, we recently passed also a law that introduces more flexibility in the workplace, cuts red tape, enhances employee protection and work-life balance. And the third and last point, a historic agreement as far as collective bargaining is concerned. Greece lagged behind as far as collective bargaining is concerned. So a national agreement was reached between the government and all national social partners, representatives of both employees and employers. And this agreement facilitates the conclusion of collective labor agreements, extend the protection to employees even after the expiration of a collective labor agreement, and in general, enhances, I would say, the protection through collective labor agreements. Professor Monasteriotis has given me the look that I'm running out of time, so I will stop there. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Minister, for keeping the time. There's so much and so comprehensive set of intervention in the labor market that I, to give justice to everything, would need more than a couple of hours, I think, definitely. So I would like, before I open up to the questions, I have two types of questions, and I don't know where to start from, but I think I'll go with a kind of more the professional side of it rather than the labor market of it. You went through a lot of labor market interventions. You ended up with the three main legislation initiatives that happened over the last couple of years. And I know this in the pipeline, we were talking also earlier, a number of some new legislation coming in, a lot of it related also to European processes, the Equal Pay Directives or the Equal Pay Act, the Directive of the Platform Economy, but also you have in the prospectively also some further reforms in the social security system and the pensions. What I want to ask you is, how do you find the environment now compared perhaps in earlier periods, the acceptance of reforms, both in relation to the public, but also how taxing and difficult it is and how much navigation does it take to do all this reform activism and to manage to not only design things but also implement things?
Right. Look, there's no doubt that implementing such reforms is not easy. You face very often a lot of resistance, and you have to have a lot of political will, both at the prime minister's level and also at the minister's level and the ministry's level, in order to actually push forward with these reforms. Let me give you just one example. Digital labor card. You cannot imagine the resistance we faced in order to enforce the digital labor card, for instance, in sectors such as the tourism industry or the food and beverage sector. And why? Because there was, and I want to say it bluntly, there was a lot of undeclared and underdeclared work. So when the digital labor card was put in place, they knew this had the effect of revealing basically undeclared and underdeclared work. I cannot describe the number of phone calls I received. Couple of days before we were about to announce that we're going to expand the labor card, hundreds, 400 calls, 500 calls. Don't do it. Like, why? Response: because I have people working for 17 hours a day. I'm like, if you have people working for 17 hours a day, that's your problem. It's not ours. It's our duty to protect employees, and it's our duty to protect the labor market as a whole. So yes, it takes a lot. It's not easy. You have to be determined that you will have what we call political costs as a result of these reforms, but I think that the Greek society is a lot more mature than it used to be. And part of it is because we went through objectively a very, very difficult phase. So I think it has come across very clearly that in order to turn the page, you need to undertake tough reforms.
So perhaps it is the maturity of the public or the experience of the crisis that kind of enables in some way reforms. What is the role of the European Union on that? There's a lot debate about how Greece has turned from the black sheep of Europe to the exemplar, the example for other countries for best practice. Do you find all the policy activism from the European side, the Adequate Minimum Wage Directive, the Equal Pay Directive and so forth, do you find them as an enabling factor, or is it also something that creates frictions and it's a kind of constraining framework for you?
Look, yes and no, but the EU also, and at the Council's meet, I would say meetings, we're very open to discussing ways in which we can cut red tape. And I say this because most initiatives at the EU level are in the right direction, in my opinion, but very often we're faced with tremendous bureaucracy. And it's something that concerns labor markets as a whole. Let me give you an example. We have the Equal Pay Directive that Greece is about to incorporate in the Greek legal system. And it's definitely a very good cause because women should not be paid less when doing the exact same job when compared to a man. That's obvious. And when there's no objective reason to justify such difference in the pay. But that being said, that has to be done in the most, I would say, easy and non-bureaucratic way. So there is a concern on behalf of companies. Okay, yes, let's do this. But what is the most efficient way to do this? So I would say, in order to answer your question, that as a whole, yes, an increase of collective bargaining, I think, is a very good thing. Setting the stage for the minimum wage and how one can take into account figures such as productivity rate, growth rate, etc. They're all in the right direction, but we often have to work a lot on implementation details because the risk is large. I mean, there is a risk that if there's too much bureaucracy, it can hit you the wrong way.
Now, I promised there's two types of questions, so let me go to the other one, which is a bit less positive. I mean, it is really impressive when you look at the transformation over the last few years of Greece, and you quoted some of the numbers, the performance in job creation, but also in wage growth. Then again, I was looking at the latest Ergani, the annual report, and there are some numbers which are quite alarming, you know, suggesting some sort of persistence of structural problems in the labor market. Just let me quote a couple, three, four of them. So 50% of salaried employees are in Attica, which is quite shocking. It shows also how extensive the self-employment or undeclared employment is outside of that. There's half a quarter of a million people earning less than 500 euro per month, part-timers, obviously, and irregular workers, and 35% of salaried employees earn less than 1,000 euros in 2025. Obviously, the latest data. Employment rate is below 50% still. So there is some sort of antithesis between the very good news, which are evident, and you know, I'm not disputing at all the data that you put in the presentation, with some other, you know, statistics in the labor market, which are a bit worrisome. Are we talking about problems that it takes time to resolve, or are we developing some sort of duality where there's a successful segment in the labor market and then another segment which is just stuck into low wage, low quality jobs?
Okay, let's take those one by one. Number one, employment rate. Employment rate right now in Greece is 71%. It's never been this high in Greece's history. So it's 71%. In women, it's 69%. It's never been this high in Greece's history. Is it perfect? No. No. We have a long way to go compared to other EU countries. Has there been a tremendous difference since 7 years ago? Yes, there has been a lot of progress in 7 years ago. You're right that we do have a significant percentage who are low earners. Yes, but that number has tremendously decreased when compared to 7 years ago. Just look at the minimum wage. The minimum wage has gone up by 41.5%. So yes, Greece, you know, it's always relative. It depends where you start from, right? We hit rock bottom, so we had to work really hard in order to build in a sustainable way, in a way that would be long-lasting and not just, I would say, having in view just the short-term results. But Greece has gone a long way without that, without I would say advocating for the fact that we have resolved our problems. Nowhere near. You mentioned the fact that 50% of employees are in the Attica region. Well, that's logical because we have roughly 50% of Greece's population in Athens, and that is a problem. We are trying to work on decentralization. It's not an easy task, I can tell you. It doesn't fall within my scope, thankfully, but it's definitely not an easy task. Why? Because you have to ensure you have good schools in the regions outside of Attica. You have good hospitals. We're giving tax incentives, for instance, to people who are willing to move their tax residence and to go to regions which are close to the borders, in Evros, for instance, or in other areas such as Kozani, etc. So we're giving tax incentives. We're focused on subsidized employment programs in those regions. Evros is actually a very good example because we had an extremely high unemployment rate. It's a very difficult region for us. It's very sensitive for national reasons, as you can appreciate. And we have right now an unemployment rate of just 9%. Why? Because those targeted subsidized employment programs actually produce concrete results. So yes, you're painting a picture which is accurate as to the workers' population, but it reflects the overall, I would say, image of Greece's population, which is very, very centered in the Attica region. And yes, there are efforts that are being undertaken right now in order to decentralize as much as possible.
Now, I will ask you a question that I ask many of the speakers that I host. There's so much activism. Again, you mentioned the training programs, how you do tailored programs, apprenticeships, programs, working with firms, the Rebrain Greece initiative, where you bring firms and do this job brokering, as as we call it in my academic circles. So the question that I always ask is, what exactly is the market failure? Why can the market not do that? Why do the top 35 companies of this cannot come in London and locate this talent? Why is the employer in Kozani needing the DIPA or the ministry to tailor-make an apprenticeship program, and they cannot speak to the University of Western Macedonia to develop a program as such? Is the role of the government creating a deadweight loss? Is it needed, or is the private sector taking advantage of the willingness of the government to
Okay,
support this?
let's take a concrete example. Tomorrow we have the Rubrain event. Could one of the companies organize such an event? Definitely yes. Would it have the effect of a massive scale horizontal event that would use all the valuable resources of the embassy? No is the answer. So we are very much in favor of combining forces. It used to be the case that the Greek public sector and the Greek private sector were competitive. There's no reason to be competitive. To the contrary, one should, I would say, work together with the other. And that's why I would say that it's definitely not needed, but if it helps the companies to gather in one place, to make best use of our resources through our embassy. For us to give out the tax incentives, which we have to give out. The company cannot give out tax incentives, obviously. So what we're trying to do is to facilitate their work. Let me give you another example. As I mentioned before, it used to be the case that Greek society was very hostile to a collaboration between the public sector and the private sector. I mentioned before that we have programs running. A company will come and see us and say, I'm missing technicians for renewable energies, for instance. Can you do something for that? So we will go and craft a tailor-made program. We will set up a satellite office of a public school within the company. Take a step back. If somebody had mentioned this 10 years ago, that you have a satellite office of a public school within a private company, what would have happened? I don't even want to describe what would have happened. But now it's happening. And it's producing concrete results because we have an absorption rate that reaches 100%. So I think it's a good thing for the public sector and the private sector to work together. I'm thrilled when I see private career days. I'm thrilled. But that doesn't mean that the public sector should not do everything in its power to facilitate the creation of jobs and the matching of demand and requests.
Okay, very good. My last question before I open it to the audience, a bit forward looking. We haven't mentioned anything about AI, artificial intelligence, and of course, this is the hot issue in our lives, not only the labor market. Currently, it's not going to go away. Just to say that also we work on this issue, the labor market effects or exposure in the AI exposure in the Greek labor market. And one of the things that we're finding is that the skills are there. There is actually very, very extensive AI use in the Greek population. In some metrics, there's a lot of skill talent on broadly ICT and specifically AI tools and technologies. The biggest laggard, or the main laggard, is Greek businesses, because adoption rate, I mean, there's always exceptions, but in general, it is the business sector. So, can you tell us what are your thoughts, and if you want also the plan, so to speak, or the vision of the ministry on that, and whether you see it as a labor market effect or rather something which is more structural in the Greek economy?
Right. I wouldn't single out Greece on this one. And I say this because I think that Europe as a whole has a tremendous issue with this. If one looks at AI institutional models that are developed, one will see that roughly 73% is developed in the US and only 6 to 7% is developed within the EU. So let's start off by saying that the EU has a huge challenge here. As far as companies are concerned and to what extent they have actually incorporated AI tools, and here I'm not referring to ChatGPT or to Claude, et cetera. I'm talking about AI modules incorporated in an industry, for instance, or in a factory. It is the case that Greece is roughly around the EU average, so 12%, 13%, 14%. It's definitely low. We do have a long way ahead. I personally am, I am quite optimistic about the effect of AI on the labor market. And I say this especially for Europe, because I think that it will have a tremendous effect of increasing productivity growth. Europe lags behind. Greece has a lot of room to cover as far as productivity is concerned. And I think that AI may have a tremendous effect in liberating human forces, which up to now we're doing automated work. Imagine somebody at the factory. All day he does what he or she does is to put an object on whatever, on a specific machine. If AI steps in and is in a position to do that through a robot, for instance, then that person may be liberated to do something a lot more productive under one condition, that the state and the private sector combined will invest a lot in reskilling and upskilling. So I'm very optimistic about the effect of AI in the labor market, provided that we as a whole, and when I say as a whole, I mean the country as a whole, both the public and the private domain, will actually invest in reskilling and upskilling. But let me add one more thought here. One issue that we're working on, and I don't know if LSE has worked on this or not, is the effect of AI on social security systems. I say this because there's a lot of discussion, a lot of talk on the effect of AI in the labor market. Not many people are talking about the effect of AI on social security systems. When we flew in this morning, somebody on my team took a video of a robot that was cleaning the airport. And he asked me the question and said, "Will that robot pay social security contributions?" And that's a legit question. It's a legit question because if we're talking about jobs being displaced, I often cite an example of a hotel I go to in Brussels, which always has three people staff at the reception desk. And I went recently and I saw three robots, no human being. That makes you wonder, will those robots, and when I say those robots, I mean obviously the companies owning them, will they have to contribute anything towards the social security system? Because if the answer is no, then one has to ask himself or herself about the challenges faced with the social security system. We have a huge demographic problem in Europe. We will have, for the next many, many decades, a decreasing working population. We will have an increasing life expectancy. Don't get me wrong, that's a very good thing, but it creates a further burden on our system. So I think that there are questions related to AI in the social security system, and Greece has been looking into this question before even the EU touches upon it. Our ministry is looking into this question, into different solutions as to the effect of AI on the social security system.
I promise it's going to be my last question, but I cannot.
By all means.
I have to ask this. So yes, we're doing work on robot taxis, and but so are we doing something for the media here to say that the Greek government is in favor of a robot tax?
No,
No.
no. The Greek government is, as it should be, is investigating and exploring the effect of AI on the social security system. It's an issue that should concern us, together with many other challenges that social security systems across the EU will be faced with in the years and decades to come.
Okay, thank you. Now is the time for the audience. Please indicate. I'll think three questions at first. So the gentleman with the glasses here at the front and the lady behind him afterwards.
Bernard Casey of this place at one time, also an OECD economist at one time. You mentioned the P word, productivity. Can you say anything about how Greece's productivity has performed? We live in a country here where productivity has been flatlining and people are wringing their hands. Most countries are wringing their hands. Has Greece shown any sign of improvements? Is it improving faster? Any comment? Thank you.
Thank you. Can we pass the microphone to the lady behind you?
Hi, thank you for coming. Thank you for organizing today's talk and tomorrow's Rebrain event. My name is Tiliani Doukaki. I'm an Oxford Law School graduate. And recently, I tried to equate my degree in Greece. And I came from the number one law school in the planet to equate my degree to the 400. and I had to take 13 exams to be good enough for Athens Law School. Equally, my sister, we're both first-time women that go to university in my family with full-time scholarships, and she did her degree in finance in Cambridge, also top 10, and she had to equate to the Athens Economic University, about 1,000 in the world, and she had to take 5 exams to be good enough. Is that a big gap that maybe stops people repatriating and is not helping the gap for the high-skilled workers enough, maybe?
Would you like to take these two questions?
Sure. So the first question, productivity, it's the greatest challenge, in my opinion, of the EU and of Greece as well. That being said, the latest figures, Euro figures, European figures, show an increase of the Greek productivity at 6.4%, when the average growth of EU productivity is at 2.1%. Is this ideal? Well, it's much better than the average EU, but it's not satisfactory for us. One area in which we have to focus a lot more is productivity growth. That's why we're trying to invest a lot in technology. That's why we're creating tax incentives for investment in order to lead to a greater productivity growth. Second question, as to the equation of degrees, thank you for your question. I understand your point of view. This definitely doesn't touch upon the Ministry of Labor, but having gone through the Ministry of Education, we've gone through tough reforms in that respect. The reason for the large number of exams that one has to take stems from the fact that the UK has 3-year degrees as opposed to 4-year degrees. So this is an EU directive that provides the, I would say, the framework for recognition of foreign degrees. So those who may have gone to the best schools, indeed, but the course is a 3-year course, unfortunately have to undertake more exams. So that's the main reason. So it's the duration of the studies that leads to more exams. And always the point of reference is the host country. So if Greece had the 3-year program, then that would have been easier, obviously, to recognize. But Greece has 4-year programs, so that's why this leads to many exams.
More questions, please. There's a gentleman with the glasses there, and I'll move to this side later.
Sure. Hi, Nick Hadjinikos. It's not always easy. In most cases, it's notoriously hard for Greeks from abroad to secure Greek citizenship. And I wondered if there are any reforms in the pipeline.
Okay, and there was a question also. Can we pass the mic?
Sophia Patse, master's student at the University of Westminster, studying urban and regional planning. So my question is related to foreign direct investment in Greece. For example, higher level institutions here and colleges take great pride in pairing their students with the industry, like Sumitomo Electric has been investing in higher level colleges north and in the Midlands. So it'd be interesting to know how you can sort of you're planning to work with employers from abroad who do want to invest in industries that are bringing industrial growth in knowledge intensive sectors.
Take one more.
Yeah. Okay, so there was a question by the gentleman there.
Okay, thank you. I'm Dimitrios Minos. I'm an associate professor in economics at King's College London. And I would like to go back to your opening and the remarkable reduction in unemployment that you showed us. Does the ministry have a sense of where it comes from? Is it more public sector, private sector, or more self-employment? And additionally, potentially it could be just better reporting, as you yourself said, or just a result of a typical economic business cycle. Is there any sense of where it actually comes from? Because it would help in assessing the effectiveness of all those policies and initiatives that you laid out.
Okay, let me start with that one. It's I would say, a combination of factors. So reduction of employment, first of all, objectively, there were 600,000 people, roughly 563,000, who did not work and who are now working. So we're talking about new job posts and new job positions. So that's number one. Number two, part of it is the revelation of undeclared work, which did exist, but didn't show up in the records. So it is a combination, I would say, of factors. As to whether those new positions are within the private or the public sector, largely the private. And I say so because there's been a very systematic effort for the past years to reduce the public sector. Greece, which has a population of roughly 10 million, used to have roughly 1 million civil servants. That figure is down to roughly 600,000 now. So definitely the bulk of the new postings is not the public sector. For many years, many civil servants retired and those positions were not replaced. Whereas I showed you indicative sectors where we have large increases of employment. So I would say very largely the private sector. Going to your question about the Greek citizenship, we have the ambassador here. He's way more competent to answer that question than I am. And I know that our embassies across the world hold sessions also on how one can obtain Greek citizenship. And this ambassador that we're very lucky to have is very active on that front as well. So I will kindly ask him if he could fill you in afterwards. It would be great because he knows the subject much better than I do. FDI, now this touches upon the Ministry of Finance, basically. The figures are quite striking. If one looks at FDI, foreign direct investment that has poured in the country in the past few years, it's something like 80% higher up than most European countries. The Ministry of Finance, the Ministry of Development are putting in place incentives for FDI to pour in. We had recently to incorporate the FDI directive also of the EU, which is on the implementation front, it's moving along very well, despite initial concerns about bureaucracy as well. So there are incentives in place, and the track record shows that I think we're moving along the right direction, but there's always room for improvement, obviously.
Would you like to say something about the particular focus on industry? So, because there's a lot of FDI outside manufacturing and industry.
Let me give you an example, for instance. You may have noticed that one of the sectors where we have one of the largest increase of employment is the pharma industry, pharmaceuticals. I don't know how many people know that there are certain, there's a lot of medicine that's produced in Greece and it covers 30% of the EU needs. So this is a sector that's booming in Greece, truly booming. Indicatively, tomorrow at the Rebrain events, we have pharmaceutical companies which are desperately looking for people, desperately. So it is a booming industry, and it's not one that one may think. When you think of Greece, you may think of tourism, you may think of shipping, you may think of other industries. I'm not sure the first sector that comes to mind is pharmaceuticals.
Thank you. Okay, more questions. We'll take one from the lady here at the front and one at the back.
Thank you very much. My name is Kira Gardzou-Katsouyani. I'm a postdoctoral researcher in Oxford and research associate here at the Hellenic Observatory. I'm very interested in cooperation in the economy, and we know that historically cooperation among employers, employees, and the state has been inhibited by low trust, fragmentation among the producing groups, partisan capture. And I just wanted to invite you to reflect a bit more on kind of how you and the ministry work to overcome those difficulties and how this kind of cooperation can be sustained in the long term. Thank you.
I love that question. and I'll tell you why I love it. Because objectively, Greece has had in the past tremendous problems as far as collective bargaining, working all together, representatives of employers and of employees and the state together. There used to be a lot of, I would say, reluctance and lack of trust. So we started an effort over roughly a year ago to try to see if we, the three of us together, when I say the three, I mean the Greek government, representatives of employees and representatives of employers, could come together and actually agree on a new framework for collective bargaining. The other alternative, much easier for me, would have been to go to Parliament and legislate. We're going to do one, two, three, four things in order to incentivize collective bargaining. We decided to try it the hard way. And we sat at the same table, representatives of employees, employers, and the Ministry of Labor. We undertook negotiations for roughly 9 months. The fact that those negotiations were taking place was public. But after we got into the details, we, all of us, decided to try to keep it as low as possible so to discuss without external pressure. This lasted for 9 months. If I had come to LSE during that period and you had asked me about it, I would have told you that I'm not very optimistic that this may actually lead to a result. It actually led to a result. And 9 months later, we had the first in Greece's history national agreement among all three key players. This led to a bill that was passed in Parliament. It was voted in February. And since, in the month that followed, we had three most important collective bargaining agreements, which have led and are leading to increases of wages by 20% in certain sectors. 20% just through one agreement. It's so much more productive for that result to come through collective bargaining rather than from us to just legislating in Parliament. So I will say this just like I feel it. I'm much more optimistic about the force of social dialogue at the Ministry of Labor than I was before joining the Ministry of Labor. I truly believe that social dialogue can do miracles. And I did not think I would say this 2 years ago.
There's many connotations about Nixon goes to China and many other things. So I think, Minister, we've used your time very effectively. The presentation was very, very detailed, but also the discussion, both my questions, but also with the audience, very, very informative. It has been a pleasure to have you here. Before I ask the audience to join me in a round of applause, let me present you with a little gift. Okay. It's a tradition to offer you a modest gift. It's not something very, very valuable. Don't worry, nobody will steal it.
Okay,
but
thank you very much.
To remember your presence here. It's been a pleasure. Good luck tomorrow with the event. And thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you.